And so this is so amazing. I'm so excited about this technology. But, of course, it did not come overnight. We're going to find out more about assistive robotics with Dr. Santani Tang, who is a postdoctoral researcher at the Computational Perception and Cognition Group at MIT Massachusetts Institute of Technology. So let's connect with him right now. Good morning. Welcome to our program.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, thanks for coming on with us. So first and foremost, can you please define for our listener what exactly, for our listeners, what exactly assistive robotics is?
Yeah, sure. Well, everyone kind of knows what a robot is, and the way we think about a robotic system, there has to be a sensor and some kind of computation, and then an actuator, and that means something that interacts back with the world. So for assistive purposes, what we have would be some kind of robotic system that would help a person with a disability to replace whatever ability they have impaired or lost. In the case of the exoskeletons, helping people walk that you were mentioning, of course,
Yes.
that's a pretty obvious example, right? You can also think about a robotic system assisting someone with sensory loss, such as a blind person
Right.
using a device to help get around in the world
Ah.
and identify objects and things.
Yeah, so if we go back to the whole exoskeleton example, how would that work? Because,
Sure.
for us lay people, in terms of the way our brain works, so is something like hooked up to, I guess, our brains, and then if we're thinking something, if we want our body to move a certain way, that's picked up by these sensors, or how does it work?
Sure. There are two basic broad ways for this to work, and one is mechanical, and that's a little bit more simple. And that this responds to this is something where you don't have to hook up directly to the brain impulses, and
Yes.
it's sort of like a suit that you wear, in the sense of you just strap it to your body. I'm speaking very generally here, of course.
Okay.
But what it would do is respond to standard inputs like maybe your own muscles for legs that don't work as well, or for able-bodied people, it could even just pick up their normal impulses and magnify them to improve their strength, for example. The other kind of exoskeleton is more what you just mentioned, which is, and this is a technology that's continually under development, where
Sure.
you are actually reading motor signals from the brain. And so these
Ah.
signals typically go down to the muscles, down the spine to the muscles in, say, our legs, and activate the muscles there. The research going on now identifies what types of signals those are from the brain and uses them to it converts them to electrical signals that will then move an artificial limb. This is research that's happened mostly with monkeys and other sort of non-human test systems,
Right.
animals and so on. And this has just recently started to become something where actual human participants are moving things with their brains.
Wow, I mean, it's so mind-boggling thinking about this. But for example, just generally speaking, the second type, the latter one that you talked about, in terms of the motor signals that are read to activate those muscles, I mean, is it instantaneous, or does it take a while for it to kick in, or just how quick is a response of, I guess, the movement after, I guess, the motor signals, those signals are sent?
Oh yeah, that's a great and complicated question.
Okay.
In just say a typical able-bodied person, when
Sure.
you walk, it takes maybe about 100 milliseconds, so a tenth of a second, for the information from the brain to race down your spine to the legs. So it feels instantaneous, but it really is not.
Okay.
You can actually improve that speed quite a bit through electronic means like fiber optics or electronics, and those signals they're not limited by sort of our wet biochemistry, right?
Sure.
They can go at the speed of light. So there was a fairly famous experiment in the neuroscience of this, where a monkey in, I think it was at Duke University, with Miguel Nicolelis's group, was hooked up to a fiber optic system that went around the world to, I believe it was Yokohama, some in Japan.
Uh-huh.
And there was a robot in a lab in Japan that was walking in response to the monkey's signals.
Wow.
Now, the timing of this was such that the signals arrived at the robot in Japan before they actually got to the monkey's own feet.
Are you serious?
So that's how the speed of light works, right? It really puts biology to shame when it comes to speed.
Mm.
So the potential for basically instantaneous operation is there. The question, of course, is how long it then takes the leg to start moving, and this is a mechanical question, and how long it takes a person to learn to operate, you know, basically a foreign limb that they're training on.
Yes.
And these kinds of things can add time.
Fascinating.
But in principle, the speed should be as fast as any person could make it happen.
Mm-hmm. So what about in like everyday life? You talked about other types of assistive robotics, not just, you mentioned people who actually are impaired visually. So how would it work in that sense then?
Yeah, and this is something that I have more direct experience in.
Okay.
My own experience is with studying the behaviors of blind people and how they use tools other than their eyes to, you know, get around in the world.
Mm-hmm.
One amazing sort of leap forward in vision technology generally has been just the amazing ability of computers to identify objects in the world. This is something that our brains typically do basically effortlessly.
Yes.
And we've spent a really long time trying to emulate something that a five-year-old can do.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still a long way from doing it. But we're getting to the point where there are several, you know, systems out in the world and in development that can figure out what most common objects are,
mm-hmm.
how far an obstacle is from you, and all these sort of basic needs for identifying what's in front of you. And the trick is to make one of those wearable, and for it to communicate that information in a way that's useful and fast and intuitive to the user.
Right.
So, for example, I could have a perfect robot vision system,
mm-hmm.
that replaces my eyes perfectly, but if all it does is yell out the names of every object, there's a tree, there's a bench.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not how we move forward. If it can give you the information in something more intuitive or faster, but maybe vibration cues or sound cues, or a combination of vibration and sound.
Right.
And these are all methods that have been tried, and there hasn't been like a great answer so far, like a definitive answer.
Mm-hmm.
So in this way, the machine sensing and computation helps the human be the actuator, I guess, if we're talking about robot systems, right?
Mm.
In some cases, there may be a robot system that can act as a guide dog.
Right.
And in that sense, it would really be like a little robot that moves in front of you. It can identify curves. It can tell you, where you need to go.
Mm-hmm.
You can put in a destination. Mm-hmm. And if we can get them to the point where they navigate as well as or better than dogs, then, of course, we can load them up with a lot more information that dogs might not be able to process, like a specific store or destination or specific kinds of object or person recognition.
I see.
So these are some of the possibilities. But
well, I certainly hope that more work is done. I mean, to be able to get around with much more ease if you're blind or visually impaired would be so amazing for so many people. What about in terms of any types of disadvantages? Because I would think that in any type of assistive robotics, it might be quite costly and not quite available to everybody.
Yes, exactly. Those are two of the main problems facing the entire field of assistive robotics, that, of course, this stuff is very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I like to say is for all the work that we've done, you know, we still haven't figured out a system that beats the stick. Most people walking around, if they're blind or visually impaired, they get a lot of information from the cane. They get the sound that it, you know, the sound that it makes, the things that it touches, tells them many things about the world right in front of them.
Yes.
And canes don't run out of batteries. They don't short out in the rain. They're free or very, very cheap. And basically anyone can pick one up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these are things that assistive robotics cannot yet match. So we have to get to the point where technology is not just there, but it mm-hmm. works well enough and it's cheap and available enough for a user.
I see. What about in terms of the future of assistive robotics? Since you actually are in this field, how do you see this field, I guess, developing in the next couple of years?
Right. I think this field really has a lot of interesting, has a very interesting future in front of it. In particular, I think robotics for mobility and elder care mm-hmm. will become more and more important,
right.
especially in countries with a rapidly aging population.
Oh, yes.
And the way that economies work, it's harder and harder for, you know, grown children to take care of their parents, right, when they're still working themselves. It's just the way it is in a lot of societies.
Sure.
And in general, I think the cost will go down, and I think the processing abilities will go up along with the rest of computer science, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in this field, I think assistive robotics is sort of at the beginning of a period of like very rapid development.
I see. Well, I certainly hope that more people lend their support and, you know, also, of course, support in terms of monetary, you know, not necessarily donations, but funding for assistive robotics is increased so that, you know, we have better care for elders and for people with disabilities. But thank you so much for coming on with us and sharing your expertise on assistive robotics today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And this was our expert for today, Dr. Santani Tang from MIT.